The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, this morning, thousands of displaced Palestinians have begun to return to the north of Gaza after Israel opened checkpoints to allow the passage of Gazans by foot, and later in the morning, they will be allowed to travel by vehicle. This was supposed to happen over the weekend, but Israel delayed the passage of Gazans after accusing Hamas of reneging on parts of the ceasefire agreement. Now, in a moment, we'll speak to Fawaz Girgis, Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics. But first, aboard Air Force One on Saturday, President Donald Trump was asked about the condition of Gaza.
Because I'm looking at the whole Gaza Strip right now, and it's a mess. It's a real mess.
You'd like Jordan to house people from Gaza?
To take people. I'd like Egypt to take people. I'm meeting with, I'm talking to General al-Sisi tomorrow, sometime, I believe. And I'd like Egypt to take people, and I'd like Jordan to take people. I mean, you're talking about probably 1.5 million people. And we just clean out that whole thing. It's, you know, it's over the centuries, that's had many, many conflicts, that site. And I don't know, it's something has to happen, but it's literally a demolition site right now. Almost everything's demolished, and people are dying there. So I'd rather get involved with some of the Arab nations and build housing in a different location where they can maybe live in peace.
It could be either.
It could be temporarily, could be long-term.
Could be long-term. President Trump wanting to clean out Gaza of 1.5 million people, sending them to Jordan or to Egypt. Fawaz Girgis listening to that. Fawaz, good morning.
Good morning.
Are we now finally seeing what was really going on with Trump and Netanyahu?
Well, I think so. I think not just between Trump and Netanyahu, I think between the extremist far-right members of the Netanyahu coalition and Trump. Trump is basically trying to test the waters by saying he wants to clean out Gaza. What he really means is cleansing Gaza, ethnic cleansing of Gaza. He wants to send 1.5 million to Jordan and Egypt and basically depopulate Gaza, allow Israel either to build settlements or basically turn Gaza into a kind of a real estate attractive place for his likes of the millionaires and multimillionaires. First of all, Pat, Trump is Trump. He is very unpredictable. We do not know if this is really what is part of a strategic plan on the part of the extremists within the Trump administration who share the extremists' ambitions in Israel, or whether it was just a balloon. So I think the reason why I'm not taking it very seriously, because first of all, the Palestinians are not going anywhere, Pat. Nowhere. The Palestinians are staying in Gaza. Think what has happened in the past few hours. You have tens of thousands of Palestinians who are returning to their destroyed homes in northern Gaza. Imagine people are, delighted. They are joyful. They're going back to their destroyed homes, destroyed schools, destroyed clinics, destroyed habitat. And your listeners probably are wondering, why would anyone be so, joyful and happy? Because they realize it's their land, it's their nation, it's their home. And they also realize what had happened to their ancestors during the first Nakba or the catastrophe, where really 750,000 Palestinians, 75% of the Palestinian people were either expelled in 1947, 1948, or basically had to escape the terror by the gangs in Palestine, Israel.
But the problem for them, their joy at returning to their home place is terrific. And then they discover what is left of their home place, which might be absolutely nothing. No school, no hospital, no road, no home.
Absolutely. And that's why really it's for all of us, you and I, rationalists. We say, this is irrational. This is insane. But if you were a Palestinian who has suffered from settler colonialism, who has been hammered continuously, who were besieged, is the biggest prison, open prison in the world in Gaza. You really do appreciate what the Palestinians are going through. We have to really understand the Palestinians from the inside out, as opposed to the outside in. You and I and all of us saying, you know, this is irrational. And I think the big question is the following, Pat. I think what we really don't comprehend so far, the return of tens of thousands of Palestinians and probably a few hundred thousand in the next few days, tells you what? Israel's strategy of the populating northern Gaza has failed. And it has failed utterly. They won't be able to resettle Gaza. They won't be able to basically expel the Palestinians from Gaza. And this is by itself a major victory for the Palestinians, who basically hope to establish a home of their own, independent, sovereign home in the occupied West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem.
Now, it's interesting that that analysis might be shared by Ben-Gavir, the Israeli National Security Minister, who described the opening of the road and the return of Palestinians to northern Gaza as a humiliation. He says this is what total surrender looks like.
Well, Pat, let's look at Israel's overarching strategic aims at the beginning of the war. First of all, they want to destroy Hamas utterly. They want to have absolute total victory. They want to basically bring the hostages home alive by force, military force. And I think the underlying overarching strategic aim was to really expel the Palestinians, ethnic cleansing to Sinai, to the Egyptian Sinai. First of all, Hamas is still standing. In fact, the Americans, not myself, the Americans believe that Hamas has been able to recruit as many fighters as it had lost in the war in the past 15 months. The hostages are returning home, and they should have returned home a long time ago, but they're returning home as a result of political settlement basically reached after 15 months of a devastating war against the Palestinian population. It's the same initiative that was on the table for Netanyahu and his coalition 8 months ago. And finally, the Palestinians are staying home, Pat. This is the most, yes, we know what has happened. We know the genocide. We know war crimes. We know that food and starvation was used as a weapon of war. We know what the Palestinians have gone through. We know what the hostages, the Israeli hostages, have gone through. But at the end of the day, the Palestinians are staying home. And this is by itself a message to the Israelis and to Donald Trump that neither Donald Trump nor any other leader in the world will basically ethnic cleanse the Palestinians after what they have suffered.
But do you not think that the Palestinians themselves have learned a very hard lesson, that the atrocity of October the 7th, which numerically, of course, is dwarfed by the death toll in Gaza at the hands of the Israeli assault, but that if you do something like that to Israel, the consequences for your population are absolutely horrendous. And there won't be another October the 7th very readily, because those who try to perpetrate such a thing know what will be wrought on their own population.
Well, look, Pat, no one is saying or should say ever that killing civilians is acceptable. It was a crime against humanity. Killing civilians, it doesn't matter. That's not the question. And you're absolutely correct. Whether it's Hamas or whether, criminals, Palestinian criminals, perpetrated the crimes against civilians on the 7th of October is an acceptable period. That's not the question. I think the question, what we need to address here, Pat, and I think your question is a typical question what Western, scholars and journalists ask. The question is, what has been happening to the Palestinians since 1948? The question is, you have 6 million Palestinians refugees. The question is, the Palestinians are oppressed. The Palestinians are hammered. The Palestinians are battered continuously. The Palestinians are not free. The Palestinians have no dignity. The Palestinians have no home. That's what we need to focus on. And yes, neither Hamas nor any other Palestinian faction should ever think of committing crimes against civilians. But if you ask me about terrorism, Pat, and here probably, I am a bit exaggerating. I mean, Israel is the greatest state sponsor of terrorism in the world today. I mean, that's the reality. Yes, the Palestinians should not have done what they did on the 7th of October, but we need to call a spade by its name.
Sure, but what my question state. Really was whether or not a lesson has been learned by Hamas and others like them that perpetrating another October the 7th or something similar, where even though we will all agree that what the Israelis did was utterly disproportionate to the outrage that they suffered, but that's what will come down the tracks again for Gaza or indeed for the West Bank if an outrage such as October 7th is perpetrated again. You know, cause and effect.
Well, Pat, I really don't have an answer for you with all humility. Do I really know what the Palestinians or the Lebanese or the other people basically who have been at the mercy of Israeli might and power? I don't know. But the reality is, without a political vision, without a political solution, without addressing the historical wrong that has been basically inflicted on the Palestinians, I think, regardless, this is, even if the ceasefire holds, and I don't think so, because the Israel Prime Minister and his right-wing coalition have made it very clear this is a temporary ceasefire as opposed to a comprehensive end to the war. But regardless, I think there will be other rounds. The Palestinians are not, will never accept this condition of settler colonialism. They want their freedom. They want self-determination. So that's what I fear, regardless whether what you and I think, and we know what needs to be done. The reality is, I mean, violence perpetrates violence. And sometimes, you know, groups, militant groups like Hamas commit horrendous acts, not because they're really, savages, they're born savages, because it tells you what imprisonment, what persecution, what horrible condition could do to all of us, not just, you know, Palestinians.
Now, the question of Trump and his strategic vision for the Middle East, is there one? I mean, he is surrounded by people who probably do have a vision, whether or not Trump himself has one, because his remarks may be off the cuff, but they seem more like not the remarks of a statesman, but more the remarks of a real estate developer.
Well, he is a real estate developer. In fact, his, you know, son-in-law, Jared Kushner, said it a few months ago in the midst of Israel's war on Gaza, that he really would like to expel the Palestinians. He said, get them out. The problem with Gaza is the Palestinians. For Kushner, who was in charge of the normalization between Israel and the Arab states, and Trump, here is what the far-right vision in Israel and Israel is for Palestine. This vision, and this is not my talk, this is not my own point or viewpoint, has been said that the Palestinians don't exist as a nation. Trump's ambassador to Israel said it very clearly. He said, who are the Palestinians? Point one, they want to really basically annex, Israel would like to annex the occupied West Bank, because East Jerusalem has been really, you have almost 500,000 settlers in the occupied Arab city of East Jerusalem. They want to annex the West Bank, and from their point of view, ethnic cleansing Gaza would really mean what, Pat? The end of Palestine. That's what they want. They want to end the struggle, the notion, the hope, the aspiration for a Palestinian state. And you do it by settling the land, annexing the West Bank as they annex the Golan Heights, the Syrian Golan Heights, which was basically approved by Trump. And now Donald Trump, basically what I think has happened, and knowing a bit about Donald Trump, is eavesdropping. I mean, some people are really whispering in his ears, Mr. President, this Gaza Strip is a magnificent real estate. Imagine billions, trillions of dollars. And the Arab state, there's tons of money in Saudi Arabia and the Gulf. All you have to do is just cleanse the strip. If these sad people, you know, who have suffered a lot, they're dying, get them into Jordan and Egypt. So this is really what's happening. I don't think there's a strategic plan.
The idea that Egypt would accept people on Trump's instruction, or that the King of Jordan would say, we've already taken so many Palestinians, our nation is effectively half Palestinian, we'll take more. That's not really going to happen, is it?
Well, of course not. And not only because of that, it really would mean the end of the Hashemite monarchy in Jordan. And it really would mean the fall of a Sisi government in Egypt. They know this. So from a personal, really survival point of view, neither the Jordanians nor the Egyptian would entertain such a thing. You already have that really huge, huge popular anger, both in Egypt and Jordan and throughout the Arab world. I cannot tell you, I mean, the expressions of rage and anger throughout the Arab world. But what Trump will do is will use aid and weapons as a weapon. As you know, he just basically paused foreign aid to the entire world with the exception of Israel and Egypt. And Jordan receives $1 billion, U.S. dollars, in a year, annual aid. This is a huge, I mean, package for a country that really suffers, has major economic problems. So the Americans and Donald Trump believes that economic pressure, sanctions. So that's, I mean, think of what has happened with Colombia and think of what is threatening, Mexico.
Don't people learn, though, that if Trump says, OK, I'll keep paying you $1 billion if you take more refugees, he says to the king of Jordan. And the king says, but hang on a second, you can turn on and off the tap at will. Why should we trust you? U.S. in Paris, U.S. in the WHO, U.S. pulls out on the whim of a president. America is not a reliable partner in any area of endeavor anymore.
Well, yes, Pat, but what I mean, I hate to say this. You're talking about many regimes in the Middle East that are dependent not just on American, financial aid, on American military umbrella. You're talking about states that are not sovereign. You're talking about state where there's a huge divide between the people and the regimes. You're talking about state that are really reliant on the United States for survival. So this is a different kind of really basically narrative. Of course, we know that the United States is not reliable. Of course, we know that Donald Trump is, we know what he stands for. He is really mastering the art of making enemies. But in the Middle East, sadly and tragically, 70 years after the end of British and French colonialism, most of the states in the region, Pat, most of the states don't really have sovereignty. They are really reliant on external powers for survival. Think of what happened to Assad. Once external support basically ended, the Assad regime collapsed like a ripened fruit. So it's not just about money and predictability. It's about also the perception that any kind of decline of American support, military, political aid could really basically rattle the or destabilize.
Well, we shall watch events unfold as the Trump presidency unfolds. Fawaz, we'll leave it there. Fawaz Gurgis, Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.